From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Today, a live interview with Xanana Gusmão, rebel leader of East Timor, most probably the next president. And we look at Malathion. The greater New York, Connecticut area is being sprayed with the insecticide to deal with the West Nile-like virus. We'll look at the pesticide, how it's used around the country, and speak with the manufacturer's president. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. U.S. Defense Secretary William Cohen today accused the Indonesian military of aiding and abetting militia violence against civilians in East Timor. After meetings with Indonesia's top leaders, he said, though, he was encouraged that they understand the consequences of failing to cooperate with international peacekeepers. In brief remarks to American reporters, the general in charge of the Indonesian Armed Forces, Wiranto, said he'd spoken to Cohen like a friend, and that in the meeting with the Indonesian President Habibie at the palace, quote, "we talked about how to maintain and enhance and develop the East Timor situation." Meanwhile, Marzuki Darusman, chair of the Indonesian government-appointed Human Rights Commission, said many in Jakarta are puzzled by the U.S., quote, "which may at times be deemed to be ambivalent with regards to upholding human rights values and democracy, but at the same time also propping up authoritarian regimes in the past." In this news from East Timor, amid reports of a militia buildup in West Timor, Australia said today peacekeepers in East Timor are authorized to cross the border into the Indonesian territory if engaged in a battle with militiamen. And this news from Japan. An accident at a Japanese nuclear fuel facility today exposed three workers to radiation and prompted authorities to evacuate the vicinity, raising fresh concerns about Japan's nuclear safety. Government officials said there may have been a criticality incident at a uranium processing plant in the village of Tokaimura in the Ibaraki Prefecture, about 187 miles northeast of Tokyo. Criticality is the point at which a nuclear chain reaction becomes self-sustaining, similar to what occurs inside a nuclear reactor. The vice minister at the Science and Technology Agency told a news conference that a criticality incident may have caused the accident, which temporarily caused radiation levels to race up 4,000 times higher than normal. And this news here in the United States, the radioactive contaminant neptunium may have posed a greater threat than plutonium at three Energy Department plants where the government has acknowledged workers were exposed to toxic material. The uranium was used in military or commercial applications before being recycled by the plants, which now enrich uranium solely for fuel in nuclear reactors. The preliminary findings were of a review of the handling of recycled uranium years ago at the gaseous diffusion plants in Paducah, Kentucky, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Piketon, Ohio. Health officials are conducting door-to-door testing in New York's Queensboro for a deadly strain of encephalitis. Officials with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say they hope to get a better understanding of symptoms of the West Nile virus and possible risk factors for infection. They'll be taking blood samples door-to-door of about 300 households. We'll take a look at the whole issue of encephalitis and the insecticide being used to combat the spread of it in just a minute. About a dozen Immigration and Naturalization Service detainees say they're conducting a hunger strike to protest the government's ongoing efforts to deport them, this in Farmville, Virginia. The protesters have been held for months and in some cases years because their countries of origin, Cuba, Cambodia, and Iran among them, refuse to take them back. Some of the men face deportation for criminal convictions. Others say they don't have criminal records. More fallout from the L.A. police corruption scandal. There's now a lawsuit on behalf of a 2-year-old girl whose father was shot by Los Angeles police and then allegedly framed for assault. Lawyers have filed a claim against the city and the police department, alleging negligence and conspiracy. The suit seeks $20 million. A House subcommittee is considering anthrax vaccination in the United States military at a hearing that continues today. As more and more military personnel balk at getting the shots, North Carolina Congressman Walter Jones wants to make taking the vaccine voluntary. The subcommittee will hear from Pentagon officials who insist the vaccine is safe and must be taken. And the Transportation Department's Inspector General says travelers could be taking a big risk if they're flying overseas over the New Year's holiday. In testimony prepared for a Senate hearing today, Kenneth Mead says Y2K preparedness is sketchy or inadequate in some foreign countries. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. New York City health officials said yesterday that a 79-year-old woman from the New York borough of Queens, who died in early September, was the fifth person to have died of a form of the West Nile virus that has struck the area in recent weeks. Health officials have also confirmed that 31 people from New York City are infected with the virus, which is first thought to be St. Louis encephalitis. This is the first known outbreak of the West Nile virus in the Western Hemisphere. The disease is believed to be spread by mosquitoes that bite infected birds and then bite people. And dozens of crows have been found dead around the area, although it's still not known what they died of. Meanwhile, as many as 8 dead horses have been found way out in Suffolk County in Riverhead, Long Island. Authorities are investigating whether they were infected with the virus. The outbreak has prompted officials in several counties and states to spray with the insecticide Malathion. Virtually every corner of New York City has now been sprayed twice, and Jerry Hauer with the city's Office of Emergency Preparedness says it appears to have been effective in killing almost all the mosquitoes. But many people are upset at New York City's decision to spray Malathion with practically no warning. They say the pesticide poses its own health risks, including cancer. Just a couple of years ago, a plague of fruit flies in Tampa, Florida, prompted the U.S. Department of Agriculture to spray Malathion in urban areas. Angry residents organized against the spraying and to demand that officials provide advance information and consult with the community before deciding to spray again. And as we speak, Connecticut is now beginning to spray in areas of that state. In this segment of the show, as well as the next, we're going to speak with a number of specialists on the issue of Malathion. But before we begin, we thought we'd start with Dr. Adrian Anash, a senior environmental scientist for the pesticide program of the Environmental Protection Agency that covers Region 2, which includes New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. Dr. Adrian Anash, could you tell us why the decision to spray the pesticide Malathion, why it's believed that this will stop the spread of the West Nile virus, like encephalitis?
Good morning. As you perhaps know, there are several pesticides which are available for mosquito control, which it seems that is the major carrier of this virus. And among the available pesticides on the market, malathion is perhaps one of the least toxic pesticides available. And this is one of the reasons the city has decided to use malathion in an attempt to control these mosquitoes.
We're also joined by Steve Greenspan, who is president of Cheminova Incorporated, which is the U.S. subsidiary of the parent company that makes malathion, which is based in Denmark. Steve Greenspan, can you explain what malathion is?
Yes, Amy, good morning. First of all, I'm not president of the company. I'm executive director of the Pest Institute. I'm also a New York State licensed spray applicator.
And the Pest Institute is?
The Pesticide Education, Safety, and Training Institute, where I teach people who want to go out and become licensed spray applicators the hazards associated with chemical activity.
And what is malathion?
Well, malathion is an organophosphate that actually was developed back as a byproduct of World War II nerve gas. And what it does is it acts upon the nervous system by suppressing the enzyme cholinesterase, which is responsible for the autonomic nervous system, which in essence keeps your heart beating.
And why is it believed to be effective in dealing with encephalitis or the West Nile virus?
I'm sorry, will you repeat yourself?
Why is it believed to be effective in stopping the spread of the West Nile virus or encephalitis?
Well, it's effective because it kills the insect, but at the same time, it doesn't differentiate or discern between what else it's going to kill. So in other words, by spraying this chemical out in the environment on such a large scale the way they're doing that, it's also killing all beneficial other insects as well, such as bumblebees, the monarch butterfly, which happened to migrate over the airspace of New York City less than 2 weeks ago. And it also affects people negatively by causing cancer. It's been known to be an endocrine disruptor. It's responsible for causing birth defects, just to name a few things.
I'm looking at the warning that comes with malathion, although people haven't seen it, I think, in this area where we're broadcasting from in New York. It says this product is toxic to fish, aquatic invertebrates, aquatic life stages of amphibiana. It says for terrestrial uses, do not apply directly to water or to areas where surface water is present. I think that would surprise a lot of people because it's being so generally spread over the area.
Well, I would tend to agree with you, and it's my feeling that if they ever wage a lawsuit against New York City, it's going to be for the improper application of the chemical as well as the environmental damage it's going to cause. It's against the law to use a chemical in a purpose that it's not intended for, or something that's contrary to the label that comes with the chemical. So since malathion is not approved for use over a body of water, yet has been sprayed over land and has drifted onto water, that would constitute an improper use, and that is illegal.
We're also joined on the telephone by Dr. Robert Simon, who's a toxicologist and president of the Environmental Toxicology International, speaking to us from Virginia. Dr. Simon, you conduct tests on the health effects of malathion and other pesticides. Can you talk about your concerns?
Well, first of all, I'd like to, I believe I heard the name right, Mr. Green. I just heard the first common sense discussion that I'm aware of in New York City about malathion, and I applaud him for all his statements. Everything he just said is absolutely correct. And in terms of killing beneficials, if you want some information about what harm that can do, go down to Texas in 1995 when they obliterated all of the beneficials and allowed the army beetworm to eat the cotton crop and asked the farmers if they liked malathion. I also heard a person, as I was just getting on the show this morning, talk about it's one of the safest pesticides. And I have to say this. It's time for New York City to stop misinforming the public. Any safety factors done on old malathion, when it was a 1% or 2% mixture used back in the 50s or 60s, have nothing to do with this product. Cheminova is making a 96% high concentration product. And if Mr. Hauer and Dr. Cohen don't know the difference between high and low concentration, then go back to Chemistry 1, gentlemen, because you are misinforming the population. This product is very dangerous. The literature of the company itself is very clear. The lethal dose 50s for the Maloxone breakdown product and the isomalathion impurity, which increases in the can and in the drum and in the spray tank, if the temperature is over 70 degrees Fahrenheit, are 1,000 to 8,000 times more toxic than malathion. We are not spraying just malathion. We are spraying a product. It also has xylenes and other petroleum hydrocarbons in it. So this is a dangerous product. It's been proven dangerous in Georgia. It's been proven dangerous in Texas. Many hundreds of people are sick and still sick in Florida. Why are we spraying it in New York? And Mr. Green was absolutely correct. In the caverns and on the streets of New York, where you have wind currents, there is no way to control the drift and the mist of this product. The Spray Drift Task Force, an industry-sponsored group in 1990s, proved how far the drift can occur, from 3 to 7 miles from the site of the application. So this is a very dangerous product. It is not needed for mosquitoes. There are many other ways to kill the mosquitoes without this product, and there's no way they can justify the use of this product.
Let me ask you something, Dr. Robert Simon. Clearly, pros and cons, risks and benefits are weighed when, hopefully, when spraying something as toxic as malathion. And when we hear each day about another person dying or someone coming down with, well, first they were saying it was St. Louis encephalitis, now they're saying it's West Nile virus, people get scared. And while you're talking about the dangers of malathion, how do you think is the best way to deal with it?
First of all, the best way to deal with it started a long time ago, and we don't have that opportunity. You know, you cannot catch up for the past. You cannot catch up for all of the scouting techniques and things that need to be done to be alert to the fact that the mosquito is going to have a outbreak of a large number of mosquitoes. So those things are gone. But under these circumstances, many of the things that New York has done are good. Going to the swimming pools, using larvicide, using the trucks in isolated areas where you have standing water and problems of breeding grounds for mosquitoes, switching to something like resmethrin or even a less toxic pyrethroid, these are the things that should be done. The problem is they're overlaying this with a broadcast spraying of New York City with a toxic pesticide mixture that is really not necessary. I can guarantee you that if they stop using malathion aerial spraying, if they keep up with their ground techniques of using people who are knowledgeable out in the field to go and find the swimming pools that hopefully are all corrected by now, the swimming pools and other areas where the mosquito is breeding and get these taken care of, you won't have a problem. This thought of going down the street, however, with a truck and somehow spraying this stuff up in the air and having every mosquito hit by the spray is ridiculous. In New York City, you have wind tunnels on some of your streets. That stuff is going to drift anywhere it wants to under any conditions of wind, temperature, vortexing that's caused by cars, et cetera, and the huge population in New York.
Dr. Robert Simon, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. Dr. Simon, toxicologist and president of the Environmental Toxicology International. I do want to clarify also that we do not have the president of Kimonova. We had invited him on yesterday, but he is not coming on. The company refused. They did send us the warning that comes with malathion. Certainly nothing I have seen in the news, either in the national or local news. I have rarely seen any opposition to the use of malathion, and I know this is the case in its use around the country. When we come back, we'll also be joined by a lawyer from New Orleans who is filing a lawsuit against the company, the maker of malathion, on behalf of Florida residents. We'll speak with a Florida activist and some others around the issue of the use and misuse of pesticides. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! After that, we'll be going to, well, perhaps the first president of an independent East Timor, Shanana Gushmao. We'll speak with him live. Stay with us. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. As we take on the issue of malathion, from California to Florida to New York to Connecticut, it has been extremely controversial. Now it's being sprayed across large areas of New York City and, the latest we hear, Connecticut, to deal with the West Nile virus, what was first called St. Louis encephalitis. We wish we were able to speak with the New York City Department of Health, but they refused to come on, not to mention a representative of Chemonova, the company in New Jersey that makes malathion. But we have been listening to Dr. Robert Simon talk about the dangers of the pesticide. Dr. Adrian Anash, as you listen, you're the senior environmental scientist for pesticide program of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency in the New York area. What's your response? Dr. Anash? Dr. Anash, what is your response?
I do disagree with the previous comments that malathion is being classified as a carcinogen. Not to my knowledge anyway, it is not. Second of all, certainly it is an organophosphate, and our agency's opinion is that there are no safe pesticides. However, at the dose rates this malathion is being applied, is being deemed not to pose any adverse effects. And I can certainly assure you that both the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and our agency are closely monitoring how these pesticides are being applied. And only one more comment I would like to add is the fact that the pesticides being applied are registered with the agency, and nevertheless they are registered to be applied aerially as well.
Well, let's turn to Gladstone Jones. He's a New Orleans attorney who's filed a lawsuit against Chemonova, the maker of malathion, on behalf of Florida residents who say they were made ill from malathion spraying in 1997. Gladstone Jones, your response to Dr. Anash of the EPA?
Well, it's quite amazing to me that with several different incidents in various states across the United States of America, that the EPA has not seen fit to coordinate other studies by other states such as California and Florida to get information that they had derived as a result of health complaints which were far and wide in those states when the malathion was applied. Right in Florida, just right within the last 6 or 8 months, the Florida Department of Health conducted a health survey and initially concluded that yes, in fact, malathion was responsible for many of the very type of symptoms that that Keminova itself says could be it can be expected. It is rather amazing to me that after such a report in Florida, where there was widespread spraying in 1997 and 1998, and a very in-depth study conducted by the Department of Health in that state, that we still have governmental bodies that are advancing the position that malathion does not create health problems. That is simply amazing to me. I think the reality, based upon what we have seen in our investigation, is that what you have is a political response without concern to health effects. Sure, the encephalitis outbreak is a terrible thing and it needs to be addressed, but the knee-jerk response of governmental agencies is to base it, is to conduct themselves in a manner which is advantageous political and not facing the realities of what is already known about this particular product. And I heard Dr. Simon talk a little bit about the other products that are contained in malathion. And in Florida, we specifically know that that area was not an area which this particular product should have been sprayed in because of the temperature issues and how this material was stored in that particular state. And these isomalathion and malaxons are extremely toxic materials, and they have been documented in the state of Florida, and it has been determined by the state of Florida that the people there who complained of these illnesses were, in fact, suffered from the illnesses as a result of the spraying. So it's really relatively, it's amazing to me that the EPA in New York, when they have so much information available to them from the state of Florida and California and Georgia and Texas, would take the position that this is a harmless product.
Dr. Nash of the EPA.
It's not our position. Nevertheless, I think that we are misinterpreting what we are saying here. Our position was that, nevertheless, it is a pesticide, and we never said that it's a safe pesticide. There are no safe pesticides. I'm reiterating the very same statement. What we are saying is that at the application rates used by the city is deemed not to pose any adverse effects. And I would also like to add that the malathion is not the only pesticide used in this effort. It's one of the many. And nevertheless, all other pesticides mentioned by the previous speakers were also considered, and some of them are being applied as well.
We're also joined by Thalia Potter, who's one of the founders of Citizens for Responsible Alternatives to Malathion, otherwise known as CRAM, which is a group based in Tampa, Florida. Thalia Potter, how did you get involved with the issue?
My husband and I had experienced a spraying some 30 or so years before, and we made up our, because we lost all our beneficials, all our birds, our butterflies, and so forth, we made up our mind that if we could ever stop it, if they started it again, we'd do what we could. So we joined with 14 more people. 16 people of us gathered on the first night that the helicopters began to drone over our homes.
And why did they drone in 19, what was it, 97?
The Mediterranean fruit fly had been found. One Mediterranean fruit fly had been found in an urban area near where I live. And their reaction to that was aerial spraying of the area.
You mentioned butterflies, and the monarch butterflies are being talked about now in the New York area as being greatly reduced because of the malathion sprays. And though it's not clear, a pond of fish in Staten Island was also found dead. The fish were found dead. We're also joined in the studio by Mitchell Cohen, who is another activist. He's from the New York area. He's from the New York Green Party. And the Green Party has filed a lawsuit against New York City for the spraying of malathion here, though we certainly don't see much coverage of this in the mainstream media. Mitch, can you explain the lawsuit?
Yes, the lawsuit will be filed next week. And for those who would like to get involved in it, you can call the Green Malathion Hotline, which is 718-670-7110. The malathion is extremely dangerous. There are a bunch of new studies, one of which shows that a single dose of malathion damaged sperm and other cells of male reproductive system in mice. Another new study shows that a single dose of malathion impaired the resistance of frogs to infection. So these are brand new. They came out this year, and that's part of what's going on. But what we see in New York City is that thousands of people have been sprayed directly as they played in the parks, as they walked down streets. Helicopters came zooming in and came in low below the treetops and began spraying people en masse. No warnings were given. Nobody told to get off the streets. Nobody told to go in your homes. People have been sprayed over and over. Children have been sprayed by trucks, which have been spraying resmethrin, which is also a dangerous product. And to suggest that it's not dangerous is misserving the people. And what about the synergistic effects between resmethrin, malathion, and the other insecticides that are being sprayed? They enhance each other.
And so what are the grounds of the lawsuit?
Part of the lawsuit will be around the Clean Water Act and the spraying of malathion around water, which is it says in the statement released by the manufacturer that it's not to be used around water, and yet that's what the city is using it. The other has to do with the mayor himself and the Department of Health. Did the Department of Health declare it a health emergency? No, it did not. Why hasn't the Department of Health set up a hotline for people who are suffering from the effects of malathion and resmethrin? They hadn't even followed that. So there are all these type of horrible lack of care about people. Spray them en masse and over and over again.
Thalia Potter, in Tampa, Florida, when you were sprayed, were you told to go inside?
Yes. We were told to. This was the bizarre thing. We had our Commissioner of Agriculture going on television and spending money for a full-page ad to say it was safe. However, take your pets inside. Take your children inside. But I'm going to have to tell you that we also had children chased off playgrounds with it. We had swimming pools, and I must take exception with Dr. Simon. People should be cautioned not to go in swimming pools for several days. I would give a week because of what forms when you combine malathion with your chlorine in pools, if they're using chlorine in pools.
We're going to wrap the discussion up with Jay Feldman, who's executive director of the National Coalition Against the Misuse of Pesticides in Washington, D.C. Jay, you've been listening to the conversation so far. Can you put this in a national context?
Yes. You know, what we're experiencing on a daily basis in the United States, unfortunately, is mass poisoning. We have in our communities indiscriminate use of pesticides, whether it's in our schools or along rights of ways, and mosquito control programs like the one in New York City. I think what's been said needs to be reiterated, that the mayor in New York City, Mayor Giuliani, has been exceedingly problematic in his description of the chemical as safe, and I'm glad to hear that EPA has come on today to say that, in fact, it is not a safe chemical.
It's against federal law to make that statement.
Right. And, in fact, the New York State Attorney General has sued two chemical companies in New York State and a chemical lawn care service company for making those claims and extracted settlements in which they changed their advertising and were more straightforward about what was going on. The point here is, I think, that Dr. Simon said it, we've got to begin looking at pest control at the front end. We've got to look at preventive strategies. We've got to realize that our regulatory agencies are ill-equipped currently to evaluate the full range of effects on pesticides. You know, malathion is part of a family of chemicals called organophosphates, and the effects of exposure to that family, which includes some 40 chemicals, is additive and cumulative. And so if you look at all the literature that has actually come out of EPA itself, where they say that individuals report persistent headaches, blurred vision, muscle weakness, depression, memory and concentration problems, irritability, these are symptoms that are seen over time, not just from the individual incident. There are long-term neuropsychiatric problems that are seen in the form of neurobehavioral effects, including memory, concentration, mood, swings, and other neuropathies or nervous system problems. So, in effect, what we're looking at and what I hope people can start to focus on is that we, in our communities and our daily lives, in terms of the food we eat and the residues on the food, are exposed to not only malathion, but all the other chemicals in that family and other families. Mitchell mentioned the issue of synergistic effects between pesticides. EPA simply does not study this. So, in effect, if there is a toxic soup associated with exposure, that or those effects are not being studied. I think what happened in Florida with CRAM and other groups, Floridians Against Chemical Trespass, is happening all over the country, where people are standing up and saying, look, we don't want to be involuntarily exposed to pesticides. We don't believe the spraying such as that taking place in New York City should go on because it's indiscriminate. It's not targeted. There's drift to non-target sites and species and people. We don't believe that EPA can adequately enforce the law or has fully evaluated the impacts on safety.
That puzzles me.
And on children, which is acknowledged by the National Academy of Sciences in a report back in 1993 called Pesticides in the Diets of Infants and Children, in which the National Academy of Sciences found that EPA has simply not evaluated the impact of pesticides on children, and that includes the impacts of malathion on children.
Dr. Adrian Anasha, we're going to give you the last word and then get the phone number of the National Coalition Against Misuse of Pesticides. We've heard a lot here today about malathion.
I would like to make only a couple of more comments.
If you could do it very quickly, we only have a minute.
Very quickly, indeed. One is that I think that everybody knows by now that the EPA is reevaluating, reassessing the toxicity of all organophosphates, and has been charged by Congress to do this. And certainly by the end of year 2000, this action is going to be completed. As you know, recently EPA has announced cancellation of most of the uses of methyl parathion, which is by far the most toxic organophosphate, and drastic reductions in the uses of azimuthal metal. And the action does continue.
Well, on that note,
the second comment I want to make.
10 seconds.
If I may. We do strongly advocate the use of integrated pest management practices, and to be more specific, as far as the mosquito control is concerned, the principle of integrated mosquito control practices.
Well, I want to thank you all very much for joining us. Jay Feldman of the National Coalition Against Misuse of Pesticides, your number?
435450.
That's 202-543-5450. And as for other numbers and websites, we will give that out on our website, and you can go to that at www.pacifica.org and go to the Democracy Now! Of today. Special thank you to Dr. Robert Simon, toxicologist and president of the Environmental Toxicology International based in Virginia, Gladstone Jones, the New Orleans attorney who joined us from his vacation in Belgium, Thalia Potter, one of the founders of Citizens for Responsible Alternatives to Malathion, CRAM, based in Tampa, Florida, Mitch Cohen of the New York Green Party, and Dr. Adrian Anasha, senior environmental scientist for the pesticide program of the Environmental Protection Agency in Region 2, covering New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. Well, that wraps up this segment. It is an issue we will continue to look at around the country. But we have just been joined by our next guest, who we'll spend the next half of the show with. He lived for 17 years in the mountains of East Timor, fighting the brutal Indonesian occupiers. He is a Nelson Mandela-like figure in East Timor. He eluded the grasp of the Indonesian military for all of the time he was in the mountains. He is a figure of mythic proportions, not only for the Timorese, but to the Indonesians, because for so long as they'd hear about him coming in and out of the city of Dili and other areas, they could not catch him. But in 1992, they did. The Indonesian military imprisoned him, first sentenced him to life in prison, then because of international outcry, 20 years. His name is Shanana Gusmao, actually José Alexander Gusmao. He is 53 years old, believed to be that he will be the founding president of an independent East Timor, and he joins us on the phone now. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Shanana Gusmao. I should say that Shanana Gusmao is now in the United States only until tonight. He will be testifying before Congress today, the House Subcommittee on Human Rights, and has been meeting with national figures in New York. In the last few days, he met with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. In Washington, met with World Bank officials, as well as many others. First, how does it feel to be free? Because only in the last weeks has the Indonesian military finally released you.
I'm not yet feel free because my people is under situation of repression and fear. But in this condition, I am happy to be able to come to the United States in order to seek more help and to seek more pressure to Indonesia to avoid more killings and destruction in my country.
Shanana, we have to break for stations to identify themselves around the country, and then we will come back to you to talk about what you see as the future for your people, the East Timorese. We're speaking with Shanana Gusmao, the rebel leader of East Timor. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
There is no silence deep enough.
There is no silence deep enough.
No corruption thick enough.
No corruption thick enough.
No politician bent enough. To bury your story, to keep it from us.
Bury your story and keep it from us.
Love from a short distance.
Love from a short distance.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, our guest, Shanana Gusmao. On this day, when Falun Teal guerrillas have come down from the East Timor hills and mountains and handed over weapons, British Gurkhas arrested two pro-Indonesian militiamen holding more than 4,000 civilians at a port. Three vehicles crammed full of Falun Teal rebels drove into Dili and surrendered a truckload of weapons to the International Force for East Timor. Matu Rusto, who said he was a deputy commander of Falun Teal, said, "We want to take you and show you materials that we have found, materials left by the Indonesian army, including guns and ammunition." At the same time, hundreds of cheering East Timorese today greeted the first aid convoy to reach their devastated town of Los Palos. Journalists traveling with the aid convoy were shown wells around Los Palos that residents said contained bodies of people killed by Indonesian security forces and pro-Jakarta militias. Shanana Gusmao, the Indonesian military, many have left, but there are still many left in East Timor, either as militia or as military soldiers. What should be done with them now?
I think that it is urgent that the international community to see the problem of the security to our people and to increase the number of the multinational forces because it is the primary condition to have the East Timor people able to receive humanitarian assistance, food and medicine, and to start building a provisional administration in which we can control the population and we can assess how the destruction was and how many stimulus were killed. And it is why I came to send message to the United States and the international community to see how to improve the security situation in East Timor.
I'm looking at a piece in the Christian Science Monitor today that talks about the evidence mounting of grievous human rights abuses in East Timor. Yesterday, Reuters correspondents discovered 10 charred bodies in the back of a small white pickup truck that had been set afire in a field on the coastal road west of Dili. I believe it was in Tassitolo, well known for mass graves. And yet, the Australian multinational force, the UN that is there, is not equipped to deal, like they were in Kosovo, with start gathering forensic evidence to start dealing with both identifying people and bringing the criminals to justice. What is your feeling about an international war crimes tribunal?
I think that it is a duty for the international community in the end of this century and at the door of the two millennium, I think that it is a duty of international community to put an end of this all barbarism. And I can say that we East Timor people, we will be soon free of repression, free of every violence, but the Indonesian people is still under pressure, under repression, and I think that it is a very, very important measure to help also and essentially the Indonesian people to be able to build a process of democratization in Indonesia itself.
What kind of political and economic structure, form, do you see a new country, your country, East Timor, taking? What would your government look like?
We will have a system of multi-party form, and we will, in our constitution, we will defend the human rights, the values of democracy, values of justice, and we will we will assist the civil society to be a strong part or component of our development, and we will fight corruption, we will fight any forms of discrimination in the East Timor society.
Let me ask you the question I asked you at the United Nations news conference you held just the other day, and it is the question of women. How women will be included in the leadership, because in these years of covering the resistance and the leaders like yourself and José Ramos Horta and Bishop Bello, it seems that women have been excluded. Women who are very powerful exiles around the world now, and also those in East Timor.
Excluded, not at all excluded. We don't. We never closed the opportunity to East Timorese women to participate, and I have to say that in our struggle, East Timorese women did sometimes more than men, and we have actually we recognize that the important figures of our resistance are men, are prepared to contribute and to participate actively in the new transition process.
Do you have an exile government? How are you forming your government while you're outside of East Timor?
We don't have an exile government because we are working. We are trying to think about our participation in the framework of the United Nations in the transitional period. And if we are gathering in Darwin, it is because we want to discuss every aspect of our future, our next future. I think that it is not yet time to say that we have already a composition of a government, or we have already formulated ideas about this, because in these next weeks we will be in permanent touch with the United Nations, and we will see on the ground in East Timorese how we East Timorese can participate actively, and we will try to choose the right people to the right place in order to start leaning how to govern our destiny, our future.
We're talking to Xanana Gusmão, the rebel leader of East Timor. Many believe he will be the first president of an independent East Timor. You talk about East Timorese being involved with the whole process of building a new nation. I wanted to ask you about your meetings with World Bank officials. Many people are concerned that the World Bank, the IMF, the international monetary institutions push a certain kind of development, a development that favors multinational corporations and takes power out of the hands of the people themselves. What is your thought about that, and how will you safeguard against that?
We know that we will begin a very, very difficult period, because we will start from below zero. We need help from the international community, but we are aware of many failures of third world countries and developing countries, and it would be the reference to ourselves how to manage the AIDS, and how to manage a very active role of East Timorese in our own process.
Mm-hmm. Xanana Gusmão, you're here in the United States, a country, a government that has supported the Indonesian regime for, well, the quarter of a century that it has occupied East Timor. In 1975, under Gerald Ford, 90% of the weapons used in the initial invasion were from the United States. President Carter, after him, expedited shipment of planes, helicopters to strafe Timorese out of the mountainside. The policies were continued through Reagan and Bush, and President Clinton has been a close ally of the Indonesian regime. Yesterday, you were at a news conference with Rhode Island Congressmember Patrick Kennedy, he's introduced a bill calling for military weapon sales cut off, relations cut off, World Bank and IMF loans to Indonesia cut off. What is your feeling about the U.S. role in the support of the occupation of your country?
I think that from the start of our struggle, we were very, very aware of the international political juncture. And what we are now thinking about is that our future is more important for us than to remind all the past. We accepted all risk, all the suffering to get the opportunity to be free, to identify ourselves in among the other people in the world. And we are now seeking for a new future to ourselves, and we are very conscious that the United States and the international community in general have a responsibility in helping us, not just a political responsibility, but a moral political also. And it is why I came and to ask for the new obligations to be achieved, to be done. Hmm.
What message do you have, Shanana Gushmao, for the grassroots solidarity movement in this country and around the world as East Timor transitions from this brutal occupation to a new country? What role do you see people outside of East Timor playing?
I am very, 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 very sorry for not having opportunity to talk and to contact many, many solidarity organizations around the world, in particular the solidarity of American people and the solidarity groups here. I'm very, very sorry about this, but we have you all in our head. We know that in very difficult times, the only support we received from you. And it is why we are still waiting for your help. And I know, on behalf of my people, I know that you are welcome to East Timor to help us. And during this start, this difficult beginning, we will have always your help, your advice, and everything we need. And I wish to thank to everybody, to every solidarity groups and organizations for your support, your I wish to express our gratitude, deepest gratitude to you all.
Well, Shanana Gushmao, when do you plan to return to East Timor, and when do you see a fully independent country?
In principle, I will back to East Timor in the middle of October, and we will start to think about emergency plan to the year 2000, because you know well the destruction, physical, moral, psychological pressure that our people is facing, and we have to deal with healing wounds, to take care of our people, and to build basic infrastructures, and we will begin the strategic plan of development
Shanana, yes. I hate to cut you off. I can't believe I am, but we're out of time. Thank you so much. Independence leader Shanana Gushmao of East Timor. I want to thank Maria Carrion, David Love, Donna Neiman, Robert Knight, Bernard White, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.